is the first interview with Mary Thomas O'Neill in her hotel room on December 2, 1974 at the Hollywood Knickerbocker Hotel. The initial contact with Mary O'Neill was through letter, as a result of a letter written to Dorothy Healy informing her of Mary O'Neill's existence and of the fact that she had been a Ludlow survivor. Both from the letter to Dorothy and in my initial phone conversation with Mary O'Neill, there was some concern about her mental alertness. As a result, the decision was made to try and deal only with Ludlow and get some background information. Essentially, the interview did this. She had written a book several years ago, and much of the background and details apparently are in the book. Although it is apparent that she is becoming senile, a fact of which she is well aware, she does remember the incidents at Ludlow, but the order of them is not always correct. She did, however, correct herself on the fact that she was not able to follow the chronological sequence. It is difficult for her to remember names, but she apparently can sometimes then retrieve them. She seems somewhat feeble and certainly no younger than her 87 years. Her room is neat and rather sparse, much like the other rooms of women in hotels, but the hotel itself is in considerably better repair than most. What seems to dominate the room is the existence of her book. She has a photograph from the book as well as the book cover pasted on her desk. She was very interested and interesting and cooperative. There was a problem with the microphone, as will become obvious in the beginning of the tape.
You had one too, I think.
Oh.
This boy.
Was he from
the New York? Well, he didn't come to take him for everybody. The Greek sent him here.
From the Union, was it? Was it from the Union?
No. It was a Greek boy had been murdered in that war.
In that strike.
In that strike.
Uh-huh.
And he was a wonderful boy.
Wonderful man. What was his name? Was that Louis Pica?
Yeah, that's him.
Mm-hmm.
That was him. But there's a woman that he wouldn't leave him alone, you know. And Mother Jones was very fond of this boy. And she ordered this woman off of the lot entirely, but she wasn't grown off the lot. And when this real tragedy happened, where the children were burned to death, yes, mother to death, really. And when that happened, well, it came out about this woman. And here she'd been laying up this. And he didn't really want her.
Louis Peters, yes.
He was a wonderful man.
But why don't you go back a little further and tell me where you came from and how you happened to end up in Ludlow?
Yeah.
Where were you born?
In Wales. You see that all in this book.
Okay,
let me give you this book while I think of it.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, you have my picture of it.
Oh, when was that taken?
Oh, about two or three years ago. And so that's there to tell you about everything about my Welsh raising. About my Welsh raising. And how I came to come to America with two children. My husband has deserted us.
In Wales?
In Wales.
He was a miner in Wales?
He had been a coal miner in America. And he came over to Wales with some two relatives he had. And then when we got married, and my children too often, he decided he decided to leave or didn't want children. So he went to his parents, his relatives gave him money to come back to America. And I never saw him for 3 years. And I had an awful time raising the children.
How did you manage?
Well, my relatives were there. And they helped me get a little store together.
In
Wales, and I made our fare.
I
really not getting much land because I didn't have enough money. The immigration.
I'm going to put it closer because that microphone's not working right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you made enough money to bring both for you to come over and your two children.
In those days, they didn't pay unless they were 4 years old, and mine wasn't 4 years, five years. I forget, four or five. But anyway, I didn't have to pay for the children because they were underage.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got here and time to get off, they questioned me. And they want to know how much money I had and where was I going and who was going to receive me and all that. Well, I couldn't say my husband, but I did try it anyway. And he said, can't let you go, I have to put you in Ellis Island. See whether we have to send you back. And, oh, that murdered me after all I'd gone through.
Did your husband know you were coming over?
No. I just wanted to meet him to tell him that I was quitting him. He never quit me. And I quit him right there. And I became very popular with the men. And that killed him.
Well, how did you then get to Colorado?
Well, I had enough money to get to Colorado. I had my ticket. My uncle had been working in the mines here.
Oh.
He was kind of an official or something. And he was visiting over there. He wised me up and he gave some money towards it, you know.
I see.
And
how old were you at the time? How old were you when you came over with the two
just
children?
Just about 16.
And how old were the children?
Three children I had.
How old were they?
The children were 3 and 4, and the boy, the oldest one, was 5.
How old were you when you married?
17.
Mm-hmm.
17 when I married. And I was very popular with the boys in those days because that flaming red hair of mine really brought them home.
So your plan when you arrived was to go to Colorado and find your husband?
Yes, just to tell him. And it's in that book.
Mm-hmm.
I told him, you son of a bitch, you didn't quit me. I'm quitting you as of now. And that likes to have killed him. And I wouldn't have him back. I wouldn't take him back.
Well, what was your plan going to be then?
Well, I was only there 2 months. I had found little jobs in between, working in a restaurant, washing dishes and things like that. And after 2 months, all the miners went out on strike. And they were furnishing a tent for every family.
Were you living in one of the mining towns?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What? Which town were you in?
It's it's my memory, but the worst luck, but it'll come back to me.
Okay.
Come. It was on the tip of my tongue. He liked to have died because all the men there were falling for, you see. And I wouldn't have any of them because I'd have my fill with men. And then when all this happened, when they started shooting into, here's one bullet that I had. Can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
It looks like right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were one of the people evicted when they evicted everybody from the houses.
No. Oh, yes, they evicted. You mean before the strike?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because it couldn't pay for it. But the union had the tents for us. And they built these tents. They made them like little homes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in that. Oh, they said, and it was in August, I believe, July or August. Oh, it'll be over. The strike would be over within a couple of months. We were there for 10 months in that 50 or 60 below zero.
And this was in, the tent camp you were in was in Ludlow, or were you in one of the others?
Yes, I was with all the women and children. We were separate to the men, you know. Now, for instance, on this hill right here, or the, whatever you call it, there were just families, men, husbands, and wives, and children.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a tent like that for me and the children.
I see.
And my husband had to go down in the, below, about a quarter of a mile from us, was for the men. And my husband had his pal had to go there because I wouldn't let him in ours.
So that there were some situations like yours where there was no husband, where the women and children were together in groups?
Yeah, they knew he was my husband.
Mm-hmm.
But they paid $4 a week for each family.
During the strike?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But $4 then, you could buy what you... more than you could $40 today, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we were pretty hungry most of the time.
How many of you were in the tent?
Just me and my two daughters.
Oh, you were in the tent by yourself? There weren't several families in each tent?
The families had private tents of their own.
I see. And where was your...
And the men were all in one big tent.
Mm-hmm. Where was your son?
My son
was with your
was
husband?
In Europe at that time.
Oh, he did not come over with you?
He wasn't over here yet.
I see.
He only came over when he had heard the dirty deal I'd had from him. And he was only 15. And he managed to get the money from them to come over.
Now, what your plan, though, you were going to still stay in that area, even though you weren't going to have anything more to do with your husband?
Well, I was trying to plan, I was trying to figure out where could I get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care where it was. The children and I were going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
See? And I had an awful tough time. Awful tough time. But anyway, we got by. And I was a very famous singer in those days. And I used to sing for the crowd, you know, and we'd have doings, and I was very famous for that right there.
Was O'Neill his name or your name?
That wasn't his name. That's my second husband.
Oh, I see. What was your name at the time?
Thomas.
Mary Thomas?
Mary Thomas.
Uh-huh. And then one of the things that I've read about Ludlow was there were so many different nationality groups there.
Yes, there was.
What was it, before the massacre occurred, what did it feel like there?
Well, they were almost all foreigners. And
They had, Rockefeller was pretty much the cause of it. He brought boatloads. And they said that he had done, maybe he didn't, maybe he isn't the one that did it. But anyway, that was the gossip there. But, and all of the people there, them Italians, or you name it, they had them there, different, they were full of strangers. And they didn't know they were coming to strike. They brought boatloads of them over, and they were no sooner over here and starting in, there the strike. And that's what they met. So we all met, we were about the same, in the same boat, the whole thing. See.
Was it, how did all of the different nationality groups talk to each other
very
and feel
good.
About each other?
They soon, my daughters could only speak English. And the children learn English real fast from them. And the mothers would learn from the children. See. And that's how they managed. So, in fact, my children were really the cause of those starting to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all tried very hard to learn English from books.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were in America anyway. And they were very good, sensitive people. Very good people.
Now, did each nationality grouping seem to have its own leader in the union? Or?
Well, yes, there was a, his name is in there, but he was a leader for them. For them. But since my memory's gone, I can't think of it.
Okay.
But it's in that book.
Mm-hmm.
He was an awful good man. He and his family, because he was an American, he and his family had worked hard to make a nice camp out of, you know. And lots of them were quite happy there. Not quite happy, but they figured it was better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. And I mixed in with the Italians. And we had, I've got it in there, the conversations and everything. And we were, so when they started, they came around, they gave us notice a few times. The owners of the, you better get out of here before you get shot out. Nobody noticed what they said. And no one thought they'd do anything, but just thought it was a threat. And one morning we just got up, I was feeding my children oatmeal, and milk and oatmeal. And here I heard a bomb explode. We all rushed out to see what was wrong. And then this Greek boy,
Kikas.
Yeah. He came out and sounded like he's crying. He said, please, please listen to me. He said, get out, he said. They're going to burn us out. They're going to, they claim they're going to clean this camp out today. And we were all stunned. We didn't know what to do, where to go. And, but anyway, I woke up and and some of the foreign women, with all of my children, knew I spoke English, you know. Said, where we go? Where we go? I said, follow me, follow me. And they followed me, and I just walked and walked and walked. And
did they shoot at you as you were walking? Did they shoot guns at you as you were walking, as you were trying to leave?
Yes. They shot at our feet. That's where I got that shot. But they didn't shoot anybody, but I'm the only one that got this. I don't know why they picked. They must have didn't know probably. But anyway, we kept on going and going.
Where were you heading for?
For a place that was favoring the Union. and it was a ranch. And this one woman that had ruined the creek, she was there and laid out on the only bed that was there and sleeping. And everybody else with children, and one woman just about to have a baby. And everybody was so mad at her. So, but she had a lot of guts, this woman. She didn't care what anybody thought, she couldn't push her way to the front. So here the head man of the union came from Washington, D.C. to straighten things out, to see what was happening here. And this woman was the first up there to offer herself. She knew all about it, and she had done this for the miners, and she had done that for the miners. She hadn't done a darn thing but lay up before
this. This was after the massacre you're talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the children and women all started walking towards this ranch then?
No, we got to this ranch.
Mm-hmm. How far was that?
We had walked about 2 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Little children walked. And ourselves, we were all in. And when we got to this ranch, she had taken her only bed that was there. And now the children were laying on the floor, and some of them, all of us. So I asked the woman, I said, there's so many of us, I said, do you have some place outside where we could go, where I could take these people and lie down? She said, there's a stable out there. She said, but, she said, I don't know. She said, I put a lamp, the front so she can get in there. And when I got in there, I prayed to my mother to help me. So the tears come. So anyway, and I wondered, so that one time I went to the window and I prayed to God to help us. And do you know something? I believe it did. It seemed like after that we started getting things better. And when this man from Washington, D.C. came, he was the big official from Washington, D.C. And he said, I've got to take some of you that were here with experience back. And this woman said, I know all that happened there, and I've been helping with them and this and that. And he said, Mrs. Thomas, you're the one that's got to go. I said, I can't leave my children, I said. I can't leave my children. The children goes with you. We want the children to go with you. I said, we've got no clothes. I think we'll see that you get clothes, but you've got to be there. So this woman said, if Mrs. Thomas can't go, I can go. Well, he put her one side. He said, Mrs. Thomas has got to go. So we went. They got us ready to go to Washington D.C. They bought us clothes, and some big woman in Colorado. She was writing this, she was writing down everything that was happening. And they were going to send her to take care of us. See. She was some kind of politician. And we were in the Pullman on the way to New York, to Washington, D.C. And her and I, this big woman, she's a big politician too, I think. She came out of the berth, and a man right with her that I, like after, she was man crazy, I guess. And she came out. Her name was Jolly, Pearl Jolly, not that name. And she was supposed to hide her husband in that camp. I don't think it was her husband at all. And every night she would lay up with this other one. Oh, and the women, those women were decent women. And they were up on a hill, you know. We were away from the men entirely. The men were down there at men's camp. That's all that was. And we, for the families, we were by ourselves. And it was all respectable.
These were the women who didn't have husbands. Those were the women who didn't have husbands. The women who had husbands stayed.
The women that had husbands, it doesn't matter who they all had husbands. And mine was considered my husband. Mm-hmm. But I never let him in.
Mm-hmm.
See.
But of those who were still married, the men were still separate?
The what?
Of the families that were where the husband was still married to the wife.
Yes.
Did they stay with the wife, or were they still in the men's camp?
Well, some of them that were married, they stayed with the woman, uh-huh. with this wife in
mm-hmm.
camp. And that I didn't leave my husband because he had done me too dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't forgive him leaving me and the children without a dime.
Mm-hmm.
I never forgave him for that.
Well, Mary, what happened to him during the women and children then walked to this ranch.
The what?
The women and children walked to this ranch.
To this ranch.
When they start.
When after they walked to this ranch, she said there was nothing in there but hay for you mm-hmm. to lay down. And we did. And we warmed the children, put coats on them.
How many of you were there? Do you recall?
There was about 30, 40 women and children that we had got into that camp.
Mm-hmm.
I think four women and the rest were children. So there's a window and it was broke. I hadn't done much praying before that, although I was raised religious. But I went to that window and that's one time I prayed to God for help. And the tears just rolled from my eyes because I thought we were done, you know. The poor little children had walked the 2 miles, and when they got this hay, they just went to sleep right now. Oh, it was an awful time.
Now, did the people at the ranch just happen to be sympathetic to the Indian?
Oh, yes, they were. Very sympathetic. And they really told us about this woman taking up their bed that they couldn't exactly tell her to get out.
Mm-hmm. So when you and the other women and children left was when it first began. You didn't see them then raid the camp and put kerosene on the tents or any of that?
No, part. I didn't see them put the kerosene on the tent. But I saw the blaze. So you see, no one had any food all day. And this is the day before. So I walked up to a woman that I knew not far from there. It was about 2 or 3 miles. But I walked up there. Her husband was a railroad man. And I asked her if there was anything she could do in giving us some food that the women and children were hungry. And I said that I'd already put the children down in the well. It was a vacant well. See, it was gone dry. And I put all the children, there was about 24 or 25 children, and I put them down one by one. And the women got their mothers and they got them and laid them down. They were safer there
mm-hmm.
from the bullets. So then when I got up, when I got from there, I went up to see this woman, she could give us some food. And she said, I sure can, she said. So her husband, she filled a lot of stuff, and her husband helped me carry the food down. And he said, I can't be seen too far, too close, because the railroad would fire me for favoring the Union. And I reached this food down to them, you know. So we got along all right with that. Then after I put all the children down there, I knew that there's some men over on that hill over there, the other side of the train. I knew that they hadn't had nothing to eat all day. So I took some of the food to give to them. And when I went over there with this food, they were so glad. And I saw a sack over a body over there. And I said, who is that? He said, Charlie Costa. Oh my God, he was my next door neighbor. And his wife was such a lovely person, my great friend. Oh, I just got sick. And but he said, come back from that spot, he said. Would you help us? He said, fill the rifles for us, we've got to protect ourselves. I said, I've never held a rifle in my hand, I wouldn't know how. I'll show you. And they started showing me how to fill the rifles. I started filling rifles to protect us and the children. Then, you see, I'm trying to think what came after that. Oh, but the bullets were coming too close. And, these men, he was crying. He said, I'm afraid we're all going to be killed, he said. He said that we've got no more ammunition and that they must have killed, what's his name?
Tikus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They must have killed Tikus or he would have brought that over here. They must have killed him. And he said, Mrs. Thomas, you've got to take those children out of that well. He said, we can't take a chance. And I said, oh, I don't think they can walk there. You've got to take them. You've got to take them. That's when we went to the place after we came out of the well.
I see.
I went ahead of my story and went to go.
So first, when it all started, you put the children in the well at Ludlow itself?
No. When the shooting started,
mm-hmm.
We were trying to find some place to get out of the way of the bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew about this well, but the others didn't, because the woman at the ranch, she was a friend of mine, and I used to visit her.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a little girl, and my children used to play with her. Her husband worked on the railroad.
Now, where was this well then exactly, Mary? Was it between the ranch and the tent?
It was near the railroad.
I see.
Near the railroad. But the well had gone dry, and they had been having trouble with children falling into it.
See. But you first put the children into the well and then took them to the ranch afterwards?
Yes.
I see. But you put them in the well and then went back to where the men were on the hill?
Yes.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, they were on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
I took some of the food over to them because I knew they hadn't had any. That's when they were out of ammunition and they knew that we couldn't have possibly got. He would have been there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they never knew that he was dead already and laying out on the floor. On the ground outside. They had beat him to death. They had beat him to death. And he was a very nice man.
Now, from where you were helping them load the rifles, were you looking down on the tents then from up there? Could you see the colony from up where you were loading the rifles?
No, we had gone way over. We had gone way over to hide from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they started shooting towards that too, you know. But I don't know. I believe they were at first trying to shoot to frighten us out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they must have been drinking or something. And I don't know what happened. But I don't believe they could have ordered them to shoot us. And when they woke up, when they went through to see how many was hurt, they found two tents hurt to death and the children.
That was in the tent where they dug a cave underneath the tent?
Yes,
that the one?
That's it.
Now, how did you get shot? And how was, who took care of that?
I was taking the children, you know. I was taking, so one in each hand. Well, one was taking, my eldest one was pulling at my skirt and the little one out by my hand, and I was taking one of the babies. I had one of the babies of the, one of the women. So I was all in too. But anyway, I didn't let it get me down. So, you see now, I don't know if I've gone ahead in my story.
Well, were you shocked after you put the children in the well?
No,
or
when
after
we were going.
When you were going to the well?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's when I was shocked.
And then who took care of your injury?
Well, one of the little women that was there, one of my neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and she took off her stocking and wrapped it around my... So there wasn't, it wasn't very much,
mm-hmm.
but it was enough to make a mark there.
But and no one else in the group with the other women and children were hit?
No, but it just happened to get me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, after it was all over, they put me in jail. And I said, oh, you can't leave me here. I said, I've got two children. I said, I've got two children. We'll get the children for you.
Who put you in jail?
The jailers.
And why did they pick you?
They thought that I was leading them or something, but I wasn't.
They came to the ranch and arrested you?
No. I went back to Seattle, what we had left to live in. And that's, we didn't have anything. And that's why they told me they had to take me.
I see. Well, and when you went back, you saw everything in ruins then?
When I went back, Mother Jones was going to come in to them. And before they took me to jail, she was hiding out here. And when they were shooting at everybody, the town people started getting together and put us in a room. And that's where they, from there is where they took me to jail.
I see. And did they charge you with anything?
Yeah, well, they was never charged with anything. And we were there for 2 weeks. I was quite a singer those days. I was winning lots of prizes when I was in Wales. And what I did, I opened the windows. And my children were just children, and mm-hmm. they thought they were doing something fine. They were throwing everything they found inside at the people outside. You know, they thought they were helping, you know. So I was singing the Union song. Union forever, hurrah, boys, hurrah, down with the Baldwins and up with the Lord. Oh, we're coming, Colorado. We're coming all the way. Singing the battle cry of union. That's what that was. So I can't sing anymore.
Did you sing the many wobbly songs too?
No. I didn't know the wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all. But they thought that they took it that I was the leader of all of them. I wasn't the leader. I could speak English, and I understood quite a bit of theirs. They just had faith in me and followed me.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was. And then when we went back to Washington, D.C.
Now, so you were in jail for 2 weeks first?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the union took care of the children?
No, I had them in jail with me.
I see. Were there other women in jail, too?
No, they didn't jail anybody else.
You were the only woman jailed?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then they just released you without charging you or anything?
Well, they had brought no charge against me.
Mm-hmm.
So this big shot, the head of the union came out there. And when he went and talked to this officer, they very quickly let me out.
I see. And then you went back.
Mm-hmm.
And no, then they took you back east.
Union officials, and got me and the children a room in a hotel. And he came around, and this woman, she's still trailing him now. And she's ready to go. And this woman that lost 5 children there, she was with us, but she was dense. She didn't know what she'd done. She had gone insane. And they wanted her to go back to Washington, D.C. And when we got back after all this, what was the name of the head of the union at that time? His name was in there. He had met us at the station. At the station, not long.
In Washington.
In Washington. Mm-hmm. He and the one that was a boss of the Ludlow.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see their names.
Okay.
In there. They came out, and this woman and I were sitting there, I told you about that, in the Pullman. And this man that had stole the money from the union while the head of the union that was with us, that was to take care of us, was up in the hills fighting. Oh, I tell you, I never saw so dirty people in my life.
That was a union man?
Yeah. No, he came from a place nobody knew his name or anything else. And he kept collecting the money from the union, and there was nobody to stop him, because all the union men were up in the hills. Mm-hmm.
How many of you went back to Washington then, to the hearing?
There was 1, 2, 3. This tall woman that was sitting there by me when she saw that man come out with her from the Pullman tent. Why, just her and me, and you see, I think I've got it on the card here. Show which it is. Wait a minute, I can get out.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, get your shoulder. There. Those are the two senators.
Mm-hmm.
Two senators, and this is Judge Ben B. Lindsay and his wife, they pushed themselves into just to be somebody. And this is a chippy I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the woman that lost 5 children in that fire. And this is me.
And are those your children
those
there?
Those are my children.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the woman that was supposed to take care of us.
Oh, who was that, Mrs. John, the one who was sent along with you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that's sitting in the Pullman when he had come out from under the Pullman, been with him there all night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of nerve that some people have. I've got a picture here, I can bet you have one. Look here, my daughter made this.
Oh.
My granddaughter, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
My granddaughter. Oh, they're so good to me.